J Files on Double J.
Hey, Gemma Pike here, and this is the J Files podcast. And every week, we dive into the Double J archives to bring you the stories behind the music. But today, we decided to do something a little bit different. So rather than dig up old interviews, we thought, why don't we go straight to the source? So we asked one of Australia's most loved bands to share their top five career highlights. And here's where it gets so great. Because the top five moments you're about to hear aren't about the rock star lifestyle or the spoils of success. It's the little stuff like band merch and getting played on the radio for the first time that sticks out. But before we get into the Living End's most memorable moments, I thought I'd find out from Chris Cheney and Scott Owen what inspired their brand of rockabilly-infused punk.
We were kind of into, I remember when I first met you, you were into bands like Talking Heads and
the
bands
Cure.
Like Madness and The Cure, as well as, you know, obviously Midnight Oil. And I was kind of into some contemporary stuff like Bon Jovi and not particularly cool, but my real love was like 1950s rock and roll, rockabilly music. I was obsessed by Elvis when I was like 9 years old, I think, and you know that was kind of it for me. So when we first started the band, pretty much 80% of the songs that we learnt were all those 1950s kind of classics. A lot of Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis. We also played things like 10:15 Saturday Night by The Cure. Things like Ant Music by Adam and the Ants.
Checkered Love by Kim Wilde. The 80s favourites, I guess, from our older sister's music collection, hey?
Yeah, and I think even from back then, before we even got around to writing our own songs, we never really wanted to be just a straight-ahead rockabilly band. We wanted to bring different influences in and be a different, you know, just kind of put everything we had into a melting pot, and we kind of knew what we wanted to be, but we sort of didn't probably know how to get there at that point. So we learned hundreds and hundreds of songs and did hundreds of gigs long before we really wrote any of our own tunes or got signed or anything like that. So I think for the first 3 or 4 years that we were sort of together, we were just kind of, we were playing all sorts of different styles of music. And so I think that was really beneficial to what the Living End has become today.
A lot of years went into that overnight success.
A lot of years did go into what appeared from the outside to be an overnight rise to fame. And that brings me to the Living End's memorable moment number one, scoring a pretty huge support slot in 1996.
One of the fondest memories, and quite significant too, is the landing of the Green Day tour in Australia, where we landed the support slot for that tour. And we'd only really sort of played gigs around Melbourne at that point in time, and sort of driving out to country Victoria to play in town halls and stuff like that. Really DIY, roots level stuff. And we'd made one demonstrational cassette at that point in time. Dookie had just been released, so that was, Green Day were just blowing up and playing festival hall size venues all over the country, multiple nights in each city. And it was amazing for us. We were able to hang out with guys who we were idolising, because we'd become huge fans of Green Day, and we were able to get a sneak peek to what it's like to tour at that level really early in the piece, and see guys doing it, having an absolute shitload of fun, weren't they?
Yeah.
Weren't they just living it up, loving life at that point in time? And wasn't it nice to be on the road with them from what I remember, it must have been.
It was. I can remember sitting at the Tote and reading through Beat magazine and turning the page and seeing this huge ad, Green Day first Australian tour. And I was like, oh, man, we got to get tickets. I hope I can still get a ticket.
Yeah.
And then it was so weird then to, like, be calling our friends and family and stuff and going, oh, you want a ticket to this gig? We don't need them anymore because we're on the gig. But it was, I remember it being a tough gig because all the shows were sold out and all the kids were there only to see Green Day. And I remember, and this used to happen a lot to us, they kind of stared at us like we were from another planet because we have the double bass and this 50s kind of thing and the haircuts and the things we were wearing and stuff. We stood out at that point. And I don't think we were particularly seen as anything cool to that sort of audience. But it definitely...
We got them going.
But, you know, I think we thought when we did that tour, we just played in front of like 6,000 people in Festival Hall. Oh, we've made it, you know, things are going to be much easier now and, you know, like red carpet and we're on our way. But it kind of didn't as well. We still went back to playing to like 20 people at the Tote the following weekend. But the industry definitely knew who the band was by that point. And so Green Day will be... We're sort of forever indebted to them. They gave us a huge leg up, put us in front of an enormous amount of people. And as I said, the Australian music industry all of a sudden, kind of a lot of them knew who the Living End were.
And getting the attention of the Australian music industry led to memorable moment number two.
From Here On In, which was off our second EP, sort of that we recorded at Birdland, right? The old Birdland in Chapel Street with Lindsay Gravina.
Correct.
Got added to Triple J High Rotation. It was just a huge thing for us to get onto Triple J. But then when it got added, you know, for any young band, if one of your songs gets put onto any kind of rotation, it's a pretty sort of monumental moment.
The new release from The Living End, Chris.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good mixture again of, I think, just sort of punk and rockabilly. It seems to be working quite well. I remember that was one of the first songs, I think, where all the influences and elements that we've been trying to put together kind of came together on one song. It had a little bit of everything that we're into. Yeah, and I feel like we kind of found our sound at that point. And it was just a really... magical time overall. You know, we had just done the Green Day support and there were just lots of cool things happening, like we were playing on Recovery.
Please welcome The Living End now with a song off their latest EP, It's For Your Own Good, with From Here On In, The Living End!
I remember going to a club in Paran that we used to go to all the time called Oxide, which was like, they had live bands and it was like three floors, all kind of punk rock. It was when that whole late 90s punk rock sort of explosion thing was really happening. And I remember going there a lot, but being there one night and it came on, you know, in the club and just little things like that were just like so exciting at that time.
Being in the car.
Yeah.
Coming on the radio without you having to put a tape in. Yeah. And listen to it yourself.
Yeah. But that, it's that buzz that you get. Not everyone gets it actually, but we were lucky enough to get a few of those really exciting things, and you never really get that again. You know, right. You don't get that initial buzz from hearing it on the radio or when you get added for the first time. You know, it's never quite as good as what it is that very first time. So that was just such an exciting kind of few months for us.
Another happy memory for Chris and Scott was the moment they got their first merch in the form of the coveted 90s band t-shirt.
That was the best t-shirt ever. It was this logo that you'd drawn that was rough as guts, punk rock looking, sort of looked like it could be a Cramps t-shirt.
Yeah.
Looked like it could be a horror film from the 1950s or something. It's that sort of artwork. Just The Living End with that bass guitar and drum logo that's still around these days. On a black t-shirt, white print on a black long sleeve t-shirt.
Long sleeve.
It was so cool. Oh my God. I'd totally forgotten about that. I'm glad you reminded me.
and getting the boxes back and sort of like opening up the box. And there they were, our first ever T-shirts with our name on it. And
I used to wear them all the time. It's been a while since I've worn a Living End T-shirt, I must admit.
Give it a crack.
I'll give it a go one day. Maybe while I'm, you know, mowing the lawns or something.
Yeah, but it was pretty cool being able to, like, just, you know, sell merch. That was a novelty. And just, you know, give T-shirts and stuff away with our name on. I think it was just a single colour at that point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all we could afford. Well, we needed to sell T-shirts, didn't we? Like, when we would do those drives out to Country Victoria and stuff like that and play in those bars like Mildura and stuff like that, we really needed to sell T-shirts to make enough money to pay for the hotel that we were staying in.
Put a bit of petrol in the tank.
Put a bit of gas in the old Kingswood.
Into Living End's memorable moment number 4, I'd just like to point out how loved they are in Australia. Today, they've been voted into the Triple J Hottest 100 Countdown 20 times since 1997, and they hold the record for the most consecutive appearances in the countdown, placing 10 years in a row. It's pretty impressive, right? But all this success doesn't come without hard work and challenging moments, as you're about to hear.
Fast forwarding a little bit, another moment in our career I think that really stands out to me is when we released White Noise and the kind of lead up to making that record. '92 was kind of like, you know, when we started properly doing shows. So by about 2006, with all the touring that we were doing on State of Emergency and everything we'd done before it, there really hadn't been a break. It had been pretty sort of relentless up until that point, like just non-stop, which is kind of the way that we always wanted it, and we didn't want to do anything else. But I got to a point, I think, on that State of Emergency tour where I just got really burnt out and just felt exhausted for the first time, and I just kind of started to doubt wanting to even keep doing it and wanting to be in a band, which was just a horrifying kind of idea for me. I couldn't believe that I actually felt exhausted playing music and would even think that way. But we had just worked so hard.
I think the official term for it is a rock star tantrum.
I think so. And I was like, right, that's it. We're not going to do anything for 6 months or more or ever again. I don't know. I was at the point where I was like, I don't even want to be in the band anymore. I'm kind of done. I'm over it.
You weren't really met with much resistance, were you? Yeah. There wasn't like a, no way, man, don't you dare. It was a bit like, yeah, I think you're just saying what we're all thinking.
Mm. I think we just kind of probably missed it or I just felt like writing some songs, and then it was like we just had a bit of a jam, and it was great because there was this sort of renewed enthusiasm, and it kind of, you know, it was exactly what needed to happen, stepping away from each other. We got back together and it felt fresh, and we sort of, the passion was kind of reignited, and we decided we were going to make a record only if it was good, and that we would go to New Jersey and record it, and that ended up being the White Noise record, which turned out to be great, and it was a big album. We played huge shows after that, and I'm so thankful that we did it now, because we probably could have just limped along for another couple of years and really burnt out and just gone, you know, fuck this, I don't I'm done forever.
It could be the secret to our longevity is that having had that break at that point in time before it got to complete sort of exhaustion and complete sort of melting point. I think that time off was really good for us to all just, yeah, to step away from it and realise exactly what it is that we love.
Whoa.
other two albums followed White Noise, and in 2012, The Living End embarked on one of the most ambitious tours in Australian music history. On the retrospective tour, they played their six albums in full. One album per night, six nights in a row, in five capital cities. This actually ended up being seven nights in a row because they did two nights of their self-titled debut album from start to finish. You can understand why this would be a huge career highlight. But for Chris and Scott, it was the string of shows they did on this tour at the Corner Hotel in Melbourne that was particularly special.
Our dads used to drive us in the van to the Corner Hotel on a Wednesday night where we had a residency in the front bar, where on a good Wednesday we'd have maybe 15 people watching us. You know, of those there was, my brother, whichever dad had to drive us there, maybe a few friends from high school who had hopped on the train and come in because we'd promised them a beer each off our rider. Humble beginnings at the Corner Hotel, but they had us there every Wednesday and it was a chance for us to get up on stage and hone our craft, so to speak. And I remember really well the owner of the place at the time taking Chris and I for a little sneaky peek at the big room out the back of the corner, the band room, the 500-600 capacity big room. And, he turned on a few lights. It was all dark and empty in there and smelt like sticky carpet. And it was like a real rock and roll venue. And he was like, okay, here you go, boys, check this out. Maybe one day. And we were just looking at it going, wow, wouldn't that be great? Maybe one day. And then fast forward to when we did the retrospective tour, which was when?
2012.
2012, a number of years ago. We managed to sell out 12 shows in a row at the Corner. And I think that was a record at the time for the Corner Hotel. And it was certainly a great little bookend for us. Felt like quite an accomplishment and achievement.
Because he had really made it out like, you never know, boys. One day you might actually be able to play this big room. And we were playing across the road at the Richmond Club on a Saturday, and then we'd play at the Corner on a Wednesday. And I remember one time he found out and he went crazy at us. He went off saying, you can't do that. You can't play over there on a Saturday and play here on a Wednesday. And all the people that see you on a Saturday, they won't come and see you on Wednesday. And we said, no one comes to see us anyway. That's not an issue. It's nothing for you to worry about.
Yeah, 10% of nothing's nothing.
That's it.
There you have The Living End's five most memorable moments. From humble beginnings to sell-out shows, they've travelled the world and put on some amazing performances. So, what do they think of it all now?
Oh, man. Looking back is,
dangerous.
It's good. It's dangerous. I'm immensely proud of what we've achieved. Still pretty amazed if I stop and think about it. Like, I just moved back into my house in Melbourne and I'm clearing out like a back room and there's just tubs of like Living End kind of memorabilia and old tour books and
t-shirts. The old Living End t-shirts.
Yeah, I got a few news cuttings and stuff. And it kind of blows my mind when I really think about it, because Scott and I, when we first started sort of jamming in his lounge room when we were like 15 or whatever, that's the dream. From that point, we were like, we wanted to make it. We wanted to make a career in music. We wanted to write songs, play gigs. Everything that we ever kind of dreamed, is kind of, it's a cliche, but I feel like it's come true. And I feel incredibly blessed that that's happened. And very lucky. We've worked our asses off, but it's, you need luck as well. It doesn't matter how many shows you play or how good you are. There has to be this X factor, and we've been incredibly fortunate to have met the right people at the right time and got on some amazing shows, and we've traveled the world, and here we are just having finished album number 8, and we're still fooling them, so we're just going to keep doing it.
All I can say is we did all right, but I think we'll get good one day.
Yeah, it's the show must go on.
Show must go off, mate.
Show must go off.
Hang on. Excuse me. Did Chris Cheney just say album number 8?
Well, we just got back from Berlin. We just spent 6 weeks recording it. When's it coming? Maybe we're still trying to figure that out, but a little bit later in the year. But it's being mixed as we speak. And it's, God, we're so stoked with it. Beyond stoked. We just went on this huge adventure where we just booked in a producer from Berlin, German chap, funnily enough. And basically, I flew in from LA, the other guys flew in from Melbourne. We met this producer and just spent 6 weeks freezing our asses off and making, I think, arguably the best record we've ever done. It's been such an incredible adventure. Can't wait for people to hear it.
All right, that's it from me. If you like the J-Files podcast, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Tell a friend as well. And you can always leave me a review and tell me what you think of it and what you'd like to hear more of. I'm Gemma Pike, and I'm about to pull on your heartstrings even more. Here's your memories of The Living End.
It's Danielle from Penrith. They're a national treasure. When I hear them, I feel more Australian. Just like our fine country is a mix of nationalities, these guys have a unique marriage between genres of music. Rockabilly, punk, a bit of ska, good hard rock and roll, and that voice, the distinctive, hard-edged yet beautiful voice of Chris Cheney. There's just no band quite like The Living End.
This is Adam from Early Beach. They played the night before the cyclone hit here in Early Beach last year, and it was a great rev-up before a whole 2 weeks of mayhem.
It's Phil from Melbourne. They are just the best thing in Australian rock and roll ever. Chris is an absolute shredder on guitar. Scotty has the best hairstyle of any double bass player in living history. And everything he's done with his hair has just been great.
Mark from Early Beach, and Living End is one of my faves just for their live aspect. All their songs are pretty much cool rock anthems, and it's always good memories from seeing them Big Day Out or at a live solo gig.
It's Teresa from Evans Head. The energy and good vibes they bring, it's just electrifying. They make you feel like you just want to transform into some kind of rock star. Their vocals and lyrics are so strong, and it gets right into your soul and sends a good vibe through your veins nearly. And that guitar is just so cool. I remember buying their actual studio album, The Living End, whether I was happy singing my little heart out or totally mad at life and full of teenage angst. To this day, the volume will be pumped, and you can almost guarantee an air guitar or drum solo will come out.
It's Shelley from Perth. Well, this festival, hard to express into words why I love them. The song lyrics, the guitar, their sound as a whole just gets me moving and happy dancing. Songs like Strange, Fly Away and Some of Us resonated strongly for me and have helped me through hard times. Their energy on stage and how they gel together is amazing. I would just like to thank The Living End for bringing their beautiful gift to us all. Then I lose my faith in the loving, the hating, the constant
debating, the chaos, the calm, raise the alarm. It's Nicole from Melbourne. I love The Living End. I've loved them since 97 when they brought out Prisoner of Society. I bought the CD single and then onto the album, learning all the lyrics out of the little CD booklet that you used to do back before the internet. One thing I will say about them is I think that they never really got the recognition that they deserve, which is one of the reasons I love Double J, just getting quality music out there, whether it be rock or indie, and appreciating the past and the present. The J-Files.